Welcome to the Northridge Vineyard podcast. We're a real community of people who are passionate about pursuing God and growing in our relationship with Him. We hope you enjoy this message. For more information and other resources, please visit northridge.org.au.
So Abram left Egypt and traveled north into the Negev, along with his wife and Lot and all that they owned. Abram was very rich in livestock, silver and gold. From the Negev, they continued traveling by stages toward Bethel, and they pitched their tents between Bethel and Ai, where they had camped before. And this was the same place where Abram had built the altar, and there he worshipped the Lord again. Lot, who was traveling with Abram, had also become very wealthy, with flocks of sheep and goats, herds of cattle, and many tents. But the land could not support both Abram and Lot with all their flocks and herds living so close together. So disputes broke out between the herdsmen of Abram and Lot. At that time, Canaanites and Perizzites were also living in the land. And finally, Abram said to Lot, "Look, let's not allow this conflict to come between us or our herdsmen. After all, we are close relatives. The whole countryside is open to you. Take your choice of any section of the land you want, and we will separate. If you want the land to the left, I'll take the land to the right. If you prefer the land to the right, I'll go to the left." Lot took a long look at the fertile plains of the Jordan Valley in the direction of Zoar. The whole area was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord or the beautiful land of Egypt. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Lot chose for himself the whole Jordan Valley to the east of them. He went there with his flocks and servants and parted company with his uncle Abram. So Abram settled in the land of Canaan, and Lot moved his tents to a place near Sodom and settled among the cities on the plain. But the people of this area were extremely wicked and constantly sinning against the Lord. And after Lot had gone, the Lord said to Abram, "Look, as far as you can see in every direction, north, south, east, and west, I'm giving all this land, as far as you can see, to you and your descendants as a permanent possession. And I will give you so many descendants that, like the dust of the earth, they cannot be counted. Go and walk through the land in every direction, for I'm giving it to you." So Abram moved his camp to Hebron and settled near the oak grove belonging to Mamre. And there he built another altar to the Lord. All right. Well, we have this saying, don't we, that I think there's two things you can be sure of in life. What are those two things? Death and taxes, right? So we have that saying. I would add a third thing to that. Be death, taxes, and conflict, right? Right? Guaranteed. Guaranteed, because everywhere you have relationships, you have conflict. That is the unfortunate reality of where the time we live in, isn't it? I want to tell you about my first recollection of conflict. A very vague recollection. I think my high chair was green. I think my brother had a blue one, and he pushed. And my high chair went over with me in it. And it was a high chair, and it hurt a lot. And then there was the other time where my brother persuaded me to... We had this sort of veranda, and he's like, "Oh, yeah, no, mate, you could definitely put your head through those rails." And he had a really good point, because I could. I just couldn't get it out again. So... yeah, so conflict starts early, doesn't it? There was the sand pit, the high chair. There was the Lego pit. There was pass the parcel. Monopoly. The bike track. The he said, she said. The front seat. The I'm crossing you off my party list. And maybe you had the schoolyard scrap with the bloody nose. Victor, do you get any bloody noses, mate? Yeah. I can imagine you getting a few bloody noses. Yeah. And there's the venomous look across the classroom, the venomous look across the dance floor. There were the words that broke your heart, and then the words that you said that broke the other person's heart. There was the rage at your father's absence and the rage at your mother's presence. The pain of no longer being called a best friend. The church split. Love the church split, don't we? The manager who suffocated you for their narcissistic gain. Anyone have one of those? The partner who spat hate at you. The others who simply cold-shouldered you. The manipulation and the maiming that you did and that was done to you to get ahead in the race. The mother who wouldn't let you grow up and kept using you to fulfill her dashed dreams. The misunderstandings which ruptured what felt like lasting friendship. The things that grew from, you know, the little disagreement to the coldness, to the hostility, to the crisis, to the break. Only ever happened to me. I'm the only one. That's our lives, right? It's not all of life. I'm not trying to get you right. But that's our lives, right? That's what it feels like to live on planet Earth. My point is this. We know conflict. And we've been doing conflict all our lives. From the high chair on, I've been doing conflict. And maybe you even know your conflict styles. Like if you did the parenting course, they talked about, are you a rhino or are you a hedgehog? Remember that? Yeah? Maybe you know. Maybe you've done a little bit of, you know, a little bit of legwork on your conflict styles. Oh yeah, I do that when I'm in that situation. And we've got our conflict radar. Like, oh, I can see it coming. Yeah, recognize those signs. And we've got our ways of handling conflict too. In the same way, like I don't spend a lot of time thinking about how I brush my teeth. Don't spend a lot of time thinking about how I drive the car. I just do those things. I've done them enough to know how I do them. Same way for us, it's kind of what we bring into conflict. It's kind of like we've done this enough to reckon we know how we do it, and we don't really think about it. We just do it. But something's changed for some of us here. Recently, we've gotten to know Jesus. And we've decided, yeah, I want to follow Jesus, follow his way of doing things. So what might that mean when it comes to conflict? Is there any difference between doing conflict as a Christian, a follower of Jesus, or not? Is there any difference? Now, if you've read the news, there doesn't seem to be. You look at the scandal after division, after scandal in the church. You go, well, Christians seem to have more conflict than most other people, and they seem to do it worse than most other people. I mean, how many denominations do you need in a church? Like, seriously, why can't you all just kind of be one? So what do Christians have to say about conflict? Clearly they suck at it. So should being a follower of Jesus make any difference to how you do conflict? That's kind of our question this morning. And you're probably not going to find the answer to that question in the news. Like, it's probably not the best place to look. So perhaps we'll look in the Bible and see if the Bible has anything to say. Does the Bible have anything to say about what experiencing the grace of God, the impact of experiencing the grace of God has on how you do conflict? And I want to suggest to you this morning that there is actually a massive difference between how people have experienced the grace of God do conflict and how people that haven't experienced the grace do conflict. And I want to say to you that it's the experience of the grace of God and only that experience that enables you to do conflict in a healthy way. Because the title of our series is a hope-filled title, Growing Through Conflict. And I suggest to you that the only way you can grow through conflict is from a foundation of the grace of God. So it's a three-part series, don't worry. But that's the first part, okay? So I want you just to think through, and don't, we do have tissues around. I want you to think through the highlight reel of conflict in your life. just kind of start running it through your brain a little bit. You've got a highlight reel. We've all got a highlight reel. If you start shaking, we can pray for you. But some of it's not very pleasant, is it, at all? But you just start thinking through your highlight reel. Think about where that conflict's occurred. Has it occurred at work? Has it occurred with your friends? Has it occurred with your family? With your neighbours? I think most of us, family's got to get, it's got to get a tick, right? If you think about it. Families can be volatile places. I read this week that intimate partner violence causes more illness, disability and deaths than any other risk factor for women aged 25 to 44 in Australia. So families can be really brutal places. And that might be in your story. You might know that personally. Now the Bible, thankfully, is full of family stories. And they're not edited. It was funny, last night, AD doesn't do this all the time, so don't look at me, oh my gosh, your family's amazing, because it's not. So, But AD last night, he had his Bible, right? And he's like, I just want to read from my Bible. I'm like, that's great, buddy. Yeah. The Bible has like battles in it. I want some battles. Yep. Well, do you want to read Jesus' story? No, I want some battles. Okay. So I'm thinking, I'm trying to think of a clean story. Because he's got enough, right, to know, I can read all this stuff now. And it's like, the Bible's just not a clean book. It's not like, great, open to the, it's just raw. It's a raw story about real people doing all the stuff that we do to each other, right? So this is the Bible, right? So the story we've got, stories that, the family stories in the Bible are full of conflict. Because that's what families are full of. They're full of other stuff too, but they're full of conflict. And you got wives and husbands having a go at each other. You got fathers and sons having a go at each other. And you got uncles and nephews having a go at each other. So our story is about uncle and nephew. The character in our story is Abram. Now, he lived millennia ago. So we are old schooling this. Like we don't even really know. It's thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. And he was a husband and he was an uncle. At age 70 or thereabouts, he was not a father. And if you know anything about Middle Eastern cultures and stuff, not being a dad at that age, you have blown it. Like you have, something's just messed up if you don't have kids by then. So he wasn't a dad. And he was living, minding his own business, in what would be present-day Iraq, like around there in Iraq. And then in his twilight years, God appears to him. And God makes a promise to him. He says, mate, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to bless you. And through you, through your offspring, the whole world will be blessed. Abram, you are my rescue plan for the whole world. That's what he's saying to Abram. So Abram is minding his own business. Good businessman, getting on with life, and then God says, by the way, you're my rescue plan. Okay. And all you have to do is leave everything, go to a land. Now, I'm not telling you that, obviously, I wouldn't tell you the name of the land. Just trust me. I'm going to show you the land. Just leave everything and follow me. Simple, right? Okay. But Abram, for whatever reason, says yes to God's call on his life and follows God. And interestingly enough, his nephew hops in and says, yeah, I'm going with you. So you can imagine there's a bond there, isn't there? There's a loyalty already in that relationship, right? He goes, yeah, I'm going with you. And so they go off and they travel hundreds and hundreds of miles. Their big caravan, all their possessions. He packs up the whole house, takes Sarah. They're all going. And they travel, I don't know how many kilometers. It's probably around 500 kilometers or something, into this land that God finally says, yeah, this is the land. This is what I've got for you. And so they live as nomads in this land, and it's not unoccupied. You can see there's those strange words that came up, Canaanites and Perizzites. So there were tribes in this land that God had promised. It wasn't an uncontested land. It was a busy place in that sense. And he finally gets to God's promised land, and then guess what happens? There's a famine. Great promise. Thanks, God. So you've led us to a place which is unsustainable. Fantastic. So they have no option but to head south to Egypt. They go to Egypt. Abram lies about Sarah, who Sarah is. It gets really messy. I won't go into the details. Eventually, Pharaoh gets wind of it and boots them out. But they've spent enough time in that land to actually get pretty wealthy. And so they return. Lot returns. Abram returns to God's land. Pretty loaded, actually. And that's where we pick up our text. And it's interesting. I don't know if you went away on the holidays, but do you know that experience when you come home to your house or apartment or whatever it is, and it feels different, but it feels familiar, you know? And there's that, and you get that feeling in you that it's like, oh, I'm home. I love that holiday, but it's actually, I really like being home. And I think that's what's going on for Abram. If you look at those first verses, you see he goes back, he visits places that he's been, and then he starts worshiping God again. Like he's been through this mess in Egypt, but he comes back and he's remembering who I am. He's like, this is who I am. I'm a man who's, I worship Yahweh. Oh, well, not wasn't Yahweh at that point, but I worship God. I'm about God. And I'm in his land and I'm standing here on his promises. Like we sang this morning. Wasn't that awesome? Thank you, Claire. That was just amazing. But I'm standing on his promises. And so there's this, and so I can imagine for Abram, there's just this sense of peace. Like, I don't know what's happening, but I know I'm in the right place. And it's good. And I don't have the offspring I know I need, but it's good. I'm in the right place. And then what happens? Conflict. Strife. Quarreling. Conflict comes from different places, doesn't it? Sometimes we hurt someone, or they hurt us. Sometimes it's miscommunication. Sometimes it's petty jealousy. Sometimes it's just a raw response out of deep fatigue. Anyone? Oh, I can't believe it. Oh, you know that feeling? And we could go on. But in this story, it's neither Abram's fault or Lot's fault. So it's not a blame game story here. It's just conflicts happened. And it's actually growing pains. They're blessed. The flocks are going, the land can only support. And it's like, hey man, it's one of those, if you've got your startup, things are flourishing, it's like, wow, this is a problem, but it's a good problem. But it's growing pains. But it's also a conflict. The shepherds, the minions are at each other. The shepherds are getting angry, and it sort of reminds me of the kids. I don't know if you have a relationship with another mum or whatever, and then the kids are kind of having this squabble, and it's like, oh, this is getting awkward. Every time they get together, they fight. It's kind of like that. So what does Abram do? He's God's man. He's God's plan A, and God doesn't have a plan B. Global rescue plan, Abram. What's he going to do? How's he going to respond? So I want you to look at each of his steps that he takes. Because I think they're quite different from how most of us have learned to do conflict. And I reckon even though Abram is thousands of years past, I reckon there's some real wisdom in the way he responds that we can learn from. Okay, so the first thing he does is he takes initiative. Now, you know that point when there's a quarrel or something? Like you've got something and you've had this sort of, you just have this sort of something with someone, right? And you go, oh, was that conflict? I mean, I felt something. They seemed to feel something. There was a little bit of a, do I say anything? Do you know that point? Yeah? And you go, if I say something, then I make it a thing. I don't want to make it a thing. I'll just let it go. And you know how that doesn't fix it? And now when you come back to it again, it's, ooh. So Abram has this choice, and he doesn't shy away from it. He speaks. He doesn't choose passive aggression. He doesn't hole up in his tent saying to his PA, look, if Lot calls, yeah, I've got a meeting. He doesn't avoid the conflict. He actually talks to his nephew. He doesn't let the source of conflict run the house. So he's decided to acknowledge that there's a conflict. So he says, yeah, okay, acknowledge it's there. And then he chooses to engage. So you go, well, how does he engage? Now, Abram, you've got to remember, Abram is the big man here. He's the patriarch. He has got the divine promise on his life. God didn't speak to Lot. He He spoke to Abraham. He spoke to Abram. So he's got all the cards. And by divine rights, like all these resources, right? It's all his. He could have just pulled the divine right card. So, buddy, I got the word from God. Get out. Okay? It's pretty clear. Yes, agreed. Not enough resources. But you, me, I'm the big man. Now, have you been in that sort of situation with conflict? You know, when you before any real information about the conflicts arrived, right? You're like, no, I'm right, you're wrong. Period. I don't need to know the details because I'm the boss, or I'm the parent, or I'm the wife, I'm the husband, I'm the mother, I'm the expert. I know this problem better than anyone else. I know what to do. I'm the client. You're wrong. Have you done that? No, but you've known other people that have done that. It's good. Yeah. Now, that kind of response would have been completely understandable for Abram. He was the elder, the expert, the one with the title and the authority, the word from God. But what does he actually do? How does he actually respond? Well, Abram does one thing. He makes it really clear what he wants. He says he doesn't want strife. He wants peace. So that's what he says. He makes it really clear. And you can imagine him, you know, with Lot going, Lot, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. I want peace. This conflict, yeah, it's there, but we're bigger than that. I want peace. Look at me. I want peace. So he just firms up that bridge with Lot straight away. He says, I want peace. And then he affirms who Lot is to him. Because he says, mate, we're family. So before he gets into any of the details of any of it, he says, mate, we are family. That's what this family bond that we have, and that could be whatever it is, like you think through the conflict you're in right now. So whatever that bond is, he names that bond. He says, this is what we are. We are not, our relationship is not defined by this conflict. Our relationship is defined by this bond we have. And we're family. That's how I see you. I love you. We're family. That's the way he starts his conversation. So incredibly gracious, loving words. And then he does this incredibly countercultural thing. Rather than demanding him the best for himself, he goes super low. And he just says, Lot, mate, it's all yours. You just, mate, wherever you want to choose, you go for it. You take that, and I'll go where you don't want to go. I'm going to work around you. So he doesn't assert his power. He releases that and goes really low. Now, make no mistake, there was a really big difference in land. So these guys at the moment, they're walking around in the sort of the highlands, the rocky, not very fertile, but there's this lush Jordan Valley. And it is like, and you can see in the description, it's like, it's lush, it's green. It's like the Garden of Eden, the text says. It's like Egypt, where all their animals got fat. I mean, this is the good stuff. And they can both see. It's not like Abram's like, oh, I don't know. I don't know. They can both see it. I can imagine them looking down the valley. And Lot's like, his eyes turn green. I'll take that. I will take that. Now, he doesn't defer to the patriarch. In that society, he should have said, thank you. Thank you, Uncle Abram, but I am but your nephew. Thank you for, you know, honoring me, etc. But I honor you, and I will go where you don't go. But he doesn't. Eyes turn green. He's like, and the text says Lot thought of himself. So he did. He just thought of himself. That's all he had. That's all he had grid for. So he thought of himself. And it's pretty ominous because it says the text is pretty ominous in terms of the warning. It says he moved down near Sodom. And then it makes a few details around. And this was before God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So it's like, the text is saying, it's pretty subtle, but he's like, this is a bad decision. To only think of yourself in conflict, bad decision. So right through the conflict, Abram loved Lot. He communicated clearly his desire for peace, and he chose to graciously prefer Lot's needs to his own. And you got to ask, like, how could Abram operate like that? Like, we're talking about tribal societies, right? We're talking about, you know, tribes were wiping out tribes. It's not a, oh, well, you know, the land, you know, the land was clearly segregated and Hornsby Council was across the thing and it was fine, you know. It was like, and there was this fence and everything. It's tribal. It's violent. And Abram's just like, I will prefer you, Lot. I will give you the best land. He's just gone through a famine. This land's just been in famine. There's no indication that the land's even sustainable. But he's like, no. I release all that. Release my future for the sake of peace. Doesn't assert his rights. Doesn't use his strength to make the conflict work for him. Chooses to serve, to bless. Remembers who he is. Remembers who God is. So, how does he do this? How does Abram do that? How does he have the strength? Because conflict brings out the best in us, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. You always act the best when you're in a conflict. Oh, yeah. Quite the opposite, right? It usually brings out all your worst stuff. And yet, Abram, under pressure in conflict, is incredibly gracious. How does he do that? How does he get the sort of power that is required to be gracious in conflict? It's all very well to be gracious on your good days, right? Anyone can do that. I bless you. I love you. In conflict, it's different. You got your jousting sticks, the visor's down, you're ready to go, right? But Abram puts the visor up, throws down his jousting sticks, takes off the armor and says, hit me. How do you do that? Genuinely. Well, I think the part of the answer lies in verse 14 and 18, doesn't it? Because God comes to Abram after the conflict. You know how you want God to come to you before the conflict or during the conflict? God, speak. God, give me the... And then it feels like God's a million miles away in the conflict. But God comes after the conflict. And God says to Abram, he says... And you know how you feel after you've had that talk? You know how you feel like you're like a Ming vase? And you're exhausted and you feel shredded inside after you've had the talk? You know the talk. Just exhausted. And all the doubts come in. You go, Jesus, did I say the right thing? I bet I didn't say the right thing. All that stuff floods in. At that moment, in that place, God comes and speaks to Abram. So when he's all churning in his guts, God comes and speaks to him and said, Abram, you're my man. I am faithful. I will do what I have promised to do. I will give you that land. I will bless your inheritance. You're my plan A, and we're going to make this happen. We're going to work it out. I have your back. Abram banked on the grace of God even when he couldn't see God. He rested on God's promise to him. And as he rested on God's grace, that conflict was transformed from a place of only pain into a place of growth. You see what happened? Abram began to say, he saw this conflict, I can glorify God through here. I can stand on God's promise. And then he saw, and he's like, I could serve my nephew. And so he does. And then through that, he grows. You know how when you choose faithfulness, when you choose love, when you choose hope, when there's nothing around you that says to do those things, you know when it feels like this is totally the wrong thing to do? I'm going to get stuffed if I choose hope, faith, love. But when you do it, your character grows, right? That's what's going on here for Abram. He's growing. He's glorifying God. He's serving others. And he's growing. That's how conflict becomes a place of growth. So, think through the conflict you're in right now. Yep, you've got one. Okay, and I'll ask you these questions. You got it? Are you a hedgehog? So are you dodging it? Are you playing passive-aggressive, just kind of skating around? We love it. We love doing passive aggression. Marriages love it. Boards love it. Friendships love it. Churches love it. We love it. But it makes conflict deathly. Or are you a rhino charging with all your guns going and then, oh yeah, we can have that conversation later, thanks. After I've destroyed you. I don't know which of your styles is you. Look at what Abram does. He talks, chooses to have the talk, but he talks with grace. He initiates with grace. He has the conversation with grace. As you begin to talk, are you pursuing peace? Are you doing the heart work of forgiving? And are you therefore able to, when you enter into that conversation, seek the blessing of the other person? And in that conversation, are you focusing on what you have in common, on your humanity, on the fact that you're both majestically loved children of God? Or has the conflict become the only filter that you can see the other person through? Are you seeking to understand more than to be understood? And finally, are you choosing to serve or are you choosing to assert your power? Are you choosing to just, yeah, I'm just going to do this through my title. I'm the parent, I'm the father, I'm the whatever, I'm the boss. That's the way we're going to navigate this conflict. Or are you willing to throw those things off and actually serve? Now, these things are incredibly countercultural. They make you vulnerable. And that's the point, right? If your heart doesn't know you're safe, you can't choose these things. Because it makes no sense. But if I let go of the land, who's looking after me? If I'm not defensive, if I'm not protecting myself in this conversation, who's looking after me? And the answer is, if you're not assured of someone else looking after you, you can't do it. Conflict will only be a place of pain. It won't be a place of growth. Until your heart is assured that someone else with power is looking after you. Plants need, and Helena's been wondering about this, haven't you, Helena? Plants need, you might know this, plants need light to grow. So this is our grace lamp. The only way that conflict will be a place of growth for you is when you let the grace of God shine in that conflict. So how can you carry the assurance that Abram had in this? And he's a very human character, so I don't think he was like Superman in turbans or something. You know, he just wasn't that. How can you carry that assurance? How can we have in our hearts actually assured that we're safe and so in conflict we can step in and serve? How can that happen? Well, I want to suggest that we need to look to the cross. God didn't leave us wondering whether he truly loved us. He initiated the conversation graciously. He wanted his world to know his love without doubt, so he sent his son Jesus. Jesus spoke words of grace and truth to his world that God longed for peace with this world and that we are his beloved family. Can you see him doing what Abram did? It's like, I love you. We're family. And Jesus, rather than grasping what he could take, emptied himself. And through his death and resurrection, he redeemed the most horrible conflict. We were his enemies, but he redeemed it. He forgave us. But we were like Lot, and we're just like, great. We'll just take what we can get. But God kept extending the offer of forgiveness and peace. He kept declaring his unchanging AAA-rated love. Bank on it. So that's what he's offering to us this morning. Still there, thousands of years on, just going, here, forgiveness, here, grace. Take it. It's only when we're soaked in that love and grace that conflict can become that place of growth. Turn your grace light on. Not off. On. Not off. On. You get it? That's awesome.